You are listening to Agency Work, the podcast that provides career advice for people who want to work at a creative agency. I am your host, Parker Playstead. Today, I am talking with Elizabeth Edelman from Golden Word. Golden Word is a public relations and communications agency here in Richmond, Virginia. Elizabeth has a bachelor's degree in journalism, French, and Spanish from the University of Richmond. And she has an impressive background in public relations and specifically in media relations. Elizabeth, welcome to the podcast.
Parker, thank you so much for having me.
This is going to be fun. We're going to have a good time.
It will.
You and your team at Golden Word work with entrepreneurs who have built best-in-class companies focused on luxury goods, food, and beverages. Our audience today may recognize a few of these brands: Leadberry, Hardywood Park Craft Brewery, Belle Isle Craft Spirits, Charm School Social Club, an ice cream store, Flying Fox Vineyard, Veritas Vineyard and Winery, Huckberry, which is an e-commerce retailer, and Moore & Giles, a leather company. So the common theme I see here in these companies is a focus on artisan quality and what they're making. And I think that probably makes this a little more fun to be the public relations person telling these stories of these companies. So give us a little insight on what the company Golden Word, your public relations company, does for these clients, and give us a little more insight on the stories that you're helping them with.
Absolutely. Yeah, my clients are a whole lot of fun, which makes it really easy. But Golden Word is a three-person agency based here in Richmond, Virginia. We focus on PR. We also do a little bit of communications consulting as needed. Our main thrust is to help small businesses get big national press. So we have found a collective of really impressive entrepreneurs, both here in Virginia and across the United States, that are younger and in their trajectory as a business, but we see big things for them. So we are helping them get big national press that they wouldn't otherwise be able to earn on their own. We take a very personal approach in folding ourselves into each one of these companies, getting to know them on a very deep level, becoming one with their marketing teams. And I mean, ultimately, these guys are all so much fun. So it's just total blast to get to work with them and to help promote them. It makes it so easy to spread the word about them.
Yeah. Well, I came back to Richmond a few years ago and heard about the Leadberry company as they were getting off the ground. Really interesting story, really interesting guys, the two Pauls. They've gotten a lot of press. They've been interviewed many times. I've heard Paul and talked with Paul Tribble of the two Pauls. And I've heard his stories, great stories. I mean, he's a guy who took the time to learn how to make shirts as part of building out this company. I mean, he really took the time and invested in that so he understood how shirts are made. And then you got involved with them, and the press they got was phenomenal. I mean, world-class, you know, PR work for this small little Richmond company.
Thank you. Yeah.
With, what was it, the Morning Joe? Was that one
yes.
of the TV
MSNBC
shows?
MSNBC Morning Joe, yes.
Yeah. And article in GQ, article in Wall Street Journal. Really, really impressive stuff of them telling
Thanks.
Their story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to hear, since I've heard from Paul Tribble a lot of these stories, I'd like to hear from you, your side of these stories, and how you help them get this coverage.
Absolutely. I think part of our success there is that we had fantastic chemistry. Just there was something natural to my understanding of the brand and how it was so easy and natural to work with Paul Tribble. I could really understand where his mind was coming from and what he wanted to build with Leadberry, and could take his vision and direction and just run with it. The other thing that worked very well for us is my general approach is to blend the personal and the strategic in our outreach. So I want to make these brands feel very tangible and real and build a connection between the brand and the founders with the media that we're pitching. So one cool story that we have from the early days is, you know, the Pauls had just launched Leadberry. It was 6 months old. They had 16 different styles that they were selling of shirts. And just being so young, we needed to find a way to distinguish the brand early. So I suggested that we go up to New York, let's go meet the editors in person. And I emailed, I'd never done menswear PR before. I had never done fashion directly. I had worked on Fashion Week in New York City for 8 seasons, but that's a very different beast than actually trying to do the day in, day out on a fashion brand. And then also one that was brand new that no one had heard of. So going up to New York was very much our entree into brokering relationships with these big media. So I emailed the fashion editor at GQ. She had been there for 28 years and by some blessing agreed to meet with us. So I remember distinctly we were standing in the fashion closet and we had laid out their shirts on the floor. You know, this is not some fancy conference room. You know, there's interns and assistants running around folding clothes and all this. And so we just grabbed a little spot of the room, put some shirts on the floor and, you know, told her the story. We just told her exactly how they had started, what their drive was, and what they were making. And she just stopped. She says, "Stop." And the whole room paused. It was this very dramatic moment. And she's like, "So you're telling me that you're normal guys making normal shirts for other normal guys?" And we kind of all paused. We're like, "Is this a good thing? Like, is this a bad thing? Where are we going with this?" And so we paused and Paul Tribble's like, "Yes." And she just throws her hands up in the air. She's like, "I love it." So the next thing you know, we were in the August, I guess it was 2010 issue of GQ, which was the fastest I'd ever seen a long lead publication move. And then she ended up putting it, using that image again in another issue. And both times it caused a massive run on the website. For sales. And so for us, that was our MO from going out is very much like we want to go, we want to build these relationships, get in front of people, show them the product, have them touch and feel it and understand the difference that we're building. Meeting the team, like meeting the Pauls, you know that they're cooking up something really special. So that was always an incredible experience.
Great. Yeah. And with those guys, the shirts, the story, the background of Paul learning how to make shirts, it was a very authentic artisan story. But a part of this is they were selling most of this at the time e-commerce, right? So you couldn't come into a store and touch and feel and try on the shirts. So you needed to have that endorsement from other people who could touch and feel and try on the shirts and express, you know, what that was like and what they liked about the shirts. You needed that third-party recommendation. So the work you did was so important for that.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it had a huge impact in it reinforced in me my belief in the benefit of the third-party endorsement.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good. And that other story around the Morning Joe.
Yes.
That was pretty cool to get those guys to endorse it.
Well, so that is... Well, that's just a sign of hard work, right? I remember meeting with Paul Tribble, and a question I always ask clients is, what would be some of your top gets? You know, the top publications that you would love to be in. And he immediately said, I want Willie and Joe on Morning Joe wearing our shirts. And I had experience placing product on Gossip Girl, on the CW, which was a major thing at the time. And so I had done a little bit of product placement before, but the one problem is I had never heard of Morning Joe. So in the meeting, I'm like, yeah, of course we can do that, because I'm thinking to myself, I feel pretty confident that I can make this happen. One minor problem, I have never heard of this show before. So I went back to my desk, Googled it, and I was like, oh, great, it's the morning show on MSNBC. Naturally, I went ahead and called the main desk and asked to speak to wardrobe. They gave me the runaround telling me that nobody does, like, we don't have a wardrobe person here. So over time, I kept calling and eventually found out it was an assistant that worked on it. Then I called again and learned the assistant's name and I got her email address and I emailed her. And to this day, she has never emailed me back. But somehow that email got passed around and another producer reached out to me and asked, hey, we would love to get some shirts for the guys. So yes, like we hustled and got this big box of shirts up to Joe Scarborough and Willie Geist. And over time, anytime we were in New York, we asked, hey, can we swing by the studio and just come and meet you? You've been wearing our shirts. We just wanted to say thank you. And eventually pitched a story about Leadbeary's explosive growth in their first 2 years. And so it was January 2013. So I guess the company was 3 years old at that point. And got Paul Tribble and Paul Watson on air on MSNBC Morning Joe talking about their trajectory and their story. Paul Watson, had just had his first child, or he and his wife had just had their first child 7 days prior. So I'm like ripping him away from his newborn baby. And I'm like, you have to go up to New York and film this segment. But I mean, it almost crashed their website. Which is good that it didn't, because I was the only person on the other side of the website looking at it, hoping that it wasn't going to go down. But it was a completely transformative experience. Willie Geist still wears Leadbeary shirts to this day. He's been a huge spokesperson for us in a very natural way. Obviously, he's a major journalist. We do not ask much of him. He has done it out of his own interest in the company and the fact that we built a relationship with him over time.
Yeah, that's really great. And, I've seen Willie talk about the shirts. And I think I saw on YouTube or something, isn't there a clip of this, of those guys being interviewed up on the web somewhere?
I don't know where it is right now, but it's out there. You can find it.
Yeah. I saw it at one point. Well, I think a point here for the listeners is you understood some tactics and how to approach this. I mean, you obviously had some insight on some ways to get the attention of some very specific media outlets. Can you give us a little insight on how you learned how to do that?
Sure. I think the biggest way, or the most informative way I learned how to do that, was trial and error, and I had some experience at that point. But the reality is, we try to think through who are we trying to reach. So the GQ versus the Morning Joe piece is a really interesting comparison, because we learned over time that the Leadbeary customer was more, he wasn't a fashion guy, he wasn't a style guy, he was more of a businessman who wanted to present himself well with confidence and then move on with his day. So we ended up pivoting to target more business publications as opposed to fashion as a means of really hitting Leadbeary's target customer. The other tactic that we used that was most helpful is that whole building the relationship. Ultimately, we felt that if the journalists that we were approaching felt that they really liked the brand and they liked the company and they saw the value in it, that they would be more likely to cover it. So we really took time. We really focused on the long game of let's build true relationships with people. Let's get to know them and build from there, so that anytime that endorsement would come later on down the line, it would be very real.
So building that long game relationship with the media channels, it probably helps that you've got quite a depth of story to tell with your clients, so that you can keep going back to the media with some new element of the story and keep freshening it up somehow because of the depth of what these companies are doing. And again, I keep going back to they look like artisan quality oriented companies that, you know, people love to hear about, you know, how they focus on what they make and the whole artisan story. So I can see that giving you some depth to keep going back to these people and maintaining that relationship. Okay, this has been good. So let's switch over to another one of your clients, which is Hardywood Park Craft Brewery. And you were telling me earlier in our previous conversations before coming into the studio some stories around that. So I'm going to turn that over to you and let you tell me more about that.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting what you were just saying about the depth of the stories that we have to pitch, because a lot. So imagine when I started working with Hardywood, that was a totally new client to me and a new industry. And Hardywood has an incredible, deep, multi-pronged story about their craftsmanship and all the various initiatives that they take on. But when you're approaching an editor for the first time, you can't hit them with all that information at once. So one tactic that I love is making the ask easy for the editor. For example, this first story. So I had been friends with the Hardywood guys through the Ledbury founders. They were all friends. So I'd gotten to know them, and I offered to randomly send some beer out to some editors to see if we could spark some interest. I was still working at Ledbury and was just doing this for fun for some friends. So I sent some beer to this freelance writer that I had found on the internet, based in Ohio. And he ended up, I sent him some gingerbread stout, which was Hardywood's, you know, signature major groundbreaking beer. So he ended up emailing me 2.5 years later asking me, hey, do they still make that gingerbread stout? I'd like to put it in the Wall Street Journal. And again, like in terms of making the ask easy, the ask that I had made was drink this beer, like try it. That's all you have to do. I sent it to him. He was down. He is a beer guy. He wanted to try it. And he kept it in mind and was able to revisit it almost 3 years later. So he ended up not only just writing, he wrote a fantastic roundup piece on spiced winter beers, which ended up in the Wall Street Journal personal journal section. And then in getting, you know, in an exchange with me, mentioned like, I didn't know that Richmond had a beer scene. And I think this was like a Friday at 8 p.m. that I was like, Richmond doesn't have a beer scene. And I got all like inspired and wrote him this crazy email back explaining the entire trajectory of the beer scene in Richmond, hoping that maybe this would spark him to come to Richmond to see it himself so that maybe one day he might write a feature article about our Richmond beer scene, which is booming. Well, I overshot it because he wrote me back immediately and was like, I'm writing an article on this. So that was totally thrilling and was really fun to help him navigate that and put that story together for Hardywood.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And in my history of working in marketing, I've done some PR work and I've done a whole lot of press briefings and working with journalists. I've pitched stories. And part of this I learned is present a story to them that kind of helps them frame the story and write the story, right? If you can give them more than just, you know, the product or the service or the company, I mean, giving them the context like Richmond is a beer scene and a growing craft beer scene is more of a story than just Hardywood. And so that aspect, you know, I know you know this, you're nodding your head,
yes.
But this, that's the part of this in pitching stories is have some scope to it. And as I've talked with journalists in the past, when I can talk fluently about a topic and somewhat fluidly about it, so I let them kind of drive the conversation. And if it's something that I have enough insight in to be fluent in, then I can kind of keep up with them and let them guide the conversation. And that really only works for me when I have some depth of something to talk about. But, you know, if you can find that topic where you have insight and you can be a little fluid and let them kind of tell you where they want to go with the story so you can help them put together the storyline that they want to have as opposed to the storyline you want to have, the storyline they want to have. So you're trying to help them with the storyline be kind of their research on the story. You're helping them provide the information as kind of a research assistant to what they're doing. So I think that's where you're going. And is that a kind of a fair description?
Absolutely. Anything you can do to just slip right into the editor's process, the more effortless it is, the more that they can directly see how the story you're pitching fits exactly into their beat and that you're helping them. Like, it makes it very easy to say yes to. You have to also think about, like, how to pace it. So if I had reached out to that freelancer and pitched a Richmond beer scene story, he probably wouldn't have gone for it. Being that I did reach out and I said, hey, try this beer, and then got him talking about that and over time was able to just engage in a conversation with him that led to this Richmond beer scene story. I think that was this perfect blend of pitching, but also just like knowing where he's coming from and being able to contribute to the conversations that he's having and the stories he's writing.
So another story you were telling me, and I'm not going to spoil it here, I'm going to let you tell the story, but it emphasized this point about making the ask easy for the journalist. And so I'd like you to tell us more about that other story.
Yeah. So when I started working with Hardy Wood from Golden Word, I had a reporter from Bon Appetit on my list that I had been meaning to reach out to for a while, and I hadn't done it yet. But in just following Bon Appetit on Instagram, I noticed that he happened to be down in Asheville, North Carolina, the same weekend that I was going down there for this terrible bachelorette trip. And so I reached out to him very impulsively and said, "Hey, I'm coming down to Asheville. I'd love to meet you, and I'm going to bring you some Hardy Wood beer." So he was the beer guy, and I thought for sure, like, this is a slam dunk. A few days passed, and I hadn't heard from him. So it's the Saturday night. I'm leaving in the morning, and I emailed him, just not out of total desperation, but just more hope that I could close this. I brought the beer with me. I know he's around here somewhere. So I emailed, and he texted me back immediately. He was like, "Can you meet me in 30 minutes at this brewery, you know, downtown?" And I dropped everything and ditched that bachelorette party very quickly. Met him at this brewery. We ended up totally hitting it off, just talking about beer, trading stories about Hardy Wood and his experience as an editor. He was just a really gracious person, and so he was really touched that I thought to bring him beer. So again, here I've made a really easy ask of, can I just bring you beer? It's something so easy to say yes to. Ultimately, that's what the easy ask is driving at, is that you want them to say yes because it gets the conversation moving and going. So then my next move from there is I had the owners of Hardy Wood come up to New York, and we met with him at Bon Appetit, which was super cool. From there, I knew I needed to get him down to Richmond. I wanted him to see the brewery, see how everything works. Hardy Wood was at the beginning of building West Creek. So I kept inviting him to various events in town, and he wasn't available or couldn't make it. And finally, I invited him to be the judge at my personal pie party that I have every year, to which he said yes, to my great delight. So I ended up bringing him down to Richmond for Hardy Wood via my pie party, which is kind of ridiculous and amazing all at one time. And he ended up getting to spend the weekend with us, visiting the brewery, getting to see Richmond. It was just a great relationship building time. But again, it's that story of making the ask easy. Do you want to judge my pie party? I don't know if that's an easy ask because you have to travel pretty extensively for it, but he was down for it. And it was kind of fun, and I'm sure it was totally out of left field. But again, he said yes to it, and that was just a great another step in this relationship we were building.
Yeah, another cool story. So a theme here that I'm picking up on is focus on quality, not quantity. So pick the tactics that you're going to put a lot of effort into and really go forward and put the effort into those tactics. And I saw something on your website that caught my attention. You have this statement that says, "We are essentialists." And I saw that and I said, well, there's this person at work that I work with at Capital One who recommended this book called Essentialism by a guy named Greg McKeown.
McKeown.
And it's Essentialism, the Disciplined Pursuit of Less. And you've read this a few times and recommend it to people. I'll let you do the quick summary of what this book is about.
This book changed my career trajectory. It essentially, I actually use the word essentially all the time now, and I think it's because of this book. But what it does is it helps you identify your highest point of contribution and then gives you the tools to focus on it. The idea being if you split your energy in 10 different directions, you won't get very far. But if you put all of your energy in one direction, you will get much further. They also talk at length about less but better. And to me, it just really echoed things that my parents taught me, which is identify your priorities and then go for them. So this completely echoed everything that I had kind of subconsciously been taught over the years. But then to apply it to my career, when I was at Leadberry, I had been there for 4 years, really enjoying the entire process, but I was working on a broader marketing team, spending a lot of time on digital marketing, which I wasn't enjoying so much and didn't have any great expertise. So when I placed Hardy Wood in the Wall Street Journal a couple times, kind of by accident, it was a great reminder that I'm really strong at PR, that was a skill set that was really, it was my highest point of contribution, and it sparked my desire to start a PR firm. So when I started in Golden Word, my first clients were Ledbury and Hardywood. And it was a great refocusing of my skill set and putting them forward into one direction for great output.
Yeah, I like that. And I try. I get distracted at times, but I try to focus on things so that I can make that better contribution on the things that I'm choosing to work on.
And I really do give this book to everyone. My employees, first day, any intern that's on their desk, we just read it together again as a team. It instills in you a lot of really important habits on how to get things done.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, these books that give us this kind of advice and clarity on what we can focus on and how to execute and get things done, right? So if you kind of have a distracted path, things get left undone. If you can be an essentialist, you can put your energy into getting things done, and that's really what counts is getting it done.
Yes. And I think it's interesting how it applies to the job search, right? So I get a lot of applications that I can tell someone simply switched out, you know, the company name for Golden Word. And I kind of, you know, my whole drive for when I speak to students is let's think about your dream internship, your dream job, and go for that, as opposed to just scattershot sending applications everywhere. And I think you could get so much further if you spent the time and crafted that personal cover letter for the job that you most really want. And think of how impactful that would be than spending your time blasting 20 different companies with the same cover letter, hoping that maybe you'll get it because maybe it looks like a cool job. To me, I would much rather focus on the job that I cannot go without, that seems like such the thing that I have to do. And then I'm going to put a tremendous amount of energy behind making sure that I'm the best candidate for them.
I agree. So for our audience here, particularly those that are in the job search, that's advice that I endorse completely, that pick the opportunities that feel like a good fit to you, that are really the opportunities you're excited about, and focus on those, do the research to write the cover letter and tailor the resume and put as much effort as you can into the few opportunities as opposed to blasting across the many.
And in PR in particular, I liken the ability to write a cover letter to the ability to write a pitch letter, which is the core role that you would take in the job. So the cover letter takes on even greater importance because I'm sizing up your natural ability to do the job that you're applying for. So anytime I get a form cover letter, that's just, you know, it's nice, but it's not going to cut it. I'm looking for the person who knows who I am, who knows who Golden Word is, and understands and can communicate the value that they can deliver and contribute to Golden Word.
Right. And if they want to work in public relations, they need to know how to write a pitch letter. And
absolutely.
As you're looking at that.
If you can't pitch yourself, how are you going to pitch my clients?
Exactly. Right. Another thing I saw on your website is the workshops that you offer to small businesses and the people who work or own small businesses. And it's around being your own publicist. And from what it looks like on the website and from what I can imagine from reading about this, it looks like a fun activity. It looks like it's something that the participants would really get into and enjoy. So I'm going to let you talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, the workshops came from my activity and attendance at a lot of women's networking events in town. And there are so many amazing solopreneurs coming up in Richmond. There's this amazing sense of entrepreneurship in our city. And the reality is when you are a solopreneur or a very tiny company, you're not able to hire a PR firm. Yet, I firmly believe that PR is one of the most effective and cost-efficient marketing tactics that you can take. So our goal is to give those entrepreneurs the ability to do their own PR. They're never going to replace what a publicist can do, but if you can get those first few stories that will help drive some business and get some sales going, that will completely change the trajectory of your business. So our goal is to give the attendees just enough of an understanding of what's going on in the media, how to pitch. We break it all down. We give you a checklist. We even help you write your own custom game plan of how you're going to do your own PR going forward. I give you sample pitch letters. I recount some of these stories in a way that you can replicate it yourself. It's very simple, and it's a lot of fun. And I make sure that I serve homemade cookies, and you know, we've got a few fun beverage clients, so we make it a good time. So if all that sounds good, it's really easy to sign up. We've got all the dates for the rest of the year on our website, which is goldenword.co, and you can check out more about the workshops and sign up.
Good. Yeah. And I encourage you all to look at that and consider it. It looks like it's a lot of fun if you have an interest in doing your own public relations work. I can tell you from what I've seen that Elizabeth does, you're not going to find a better teacher here in Richmond to learn from.
Thank you.
Well, I think that's a good way to close out our episode today. We've kind of reached our time limit. So, Elizabeth, thank you for your time today. I appreciate you sharing your insights with us. Now it's time to wrap this thing up. To our audience, you have been listening to the Agency Work Podcast. My guest today has been Elizabeth Edelman from Golden Word. We've been talking about public relations, media relations, and some really great examples from the work that Elizabeth has done for her clients. To learn more about Golden Word, go online to goldenword.co, so goldenword.co. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much. This has been a great time.
Cool. I've enjoyed it, too. This has been a lot of fun. To our audience, thank you for listening. I will be back next week with a new guest, and I hope you will tune into that episode. This podcast was recorded at Red Amp Audio in Richmond, Virginia. This is Agency Work, signing off.